What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined, as always, for the midweek edition by Will Birchfield. And Will, before we get into the Lions game, I think we should touch base on what happened this weekend. You know, it was almost uneventful wild card weekend that turned into, an eventful one in terms of how it impacted the Lions. What were your biggest takeaways from the first round of NFL playoff games?
That I believe I did say on this podcast that the Bucks Commanders game would make for the best theater. At least I said that somewhere. Maybe not here, but I do know I said that. And that lived up to the billing on Sunday night. And that I think the Lions ended up with the most favorable matchup they could have among the four teams they were slated to potentially play. And they're in a good spot now on Saturday night. No team is easy fodder at this time of year. But when you look at the teams that could have played, three teams they have seen a lot of and that have seen a lot of them over the past year, you got to feel pretty good about the Commanders coming here with a rookie quarterback who hasn't been in games or in environments like this in the NFL, and with a defense that, you know, for this Lions offense seems pretty ripe. So my takeaway was that the Lions, while they obviously would never tell you they were rooting for one team over the other, ended up with an advantageous matchup in the Commanders.
I think we agreed, if I recall correctly, that this would end up being the matchup. Was the matchup that I wanted to see because it was unique. It was original. Love the way Jaden Daniels plays football. I don't think I necessarily agree that it would be the best option from that group. I just had no faith in Green Bay, and they showed why. And then on top of that, they suffered 412 injuries in that game. So I think the Lions would have absolutely steamrolled the Packers had they come in here. The Minnesota result certainly surprised me. I think you knew there was an emotional element to what the Rams were bringing to that matchup. Apparently the Honolulu flu has not been vaccinated quite yet for the Vikings. But to see them get manhandled the way they did, I'm pretty sure all season I've said this, and I still believe it despite the result. Like, I didn't feel like the Vikings were fraudulent. I thought it was a good team. I thought it was a well-coached team. I thought they had talent on both sides of the ball. Just the Rams came with an elevated sense of urgency in that game. And the thing that I guess really sticks out to me, and I think has maybe some staying power going forward, is what the Rams got from resting their starters in week 18. Because it was such a debate, you know, here before the Lions had to play their starters against the Vikings to secure their one seed in the division and all that. But the Rams just look fresh. And the Eagles not as much, but another team that rested starter one. Buffalo rested their starters one handily. Chiefs have been resting since September, I think. So I fully expect them to handle the Texans in the divisional round here. And so I think it's shown, you know, you worry, I guess, about not complacency, but just getting out of a rhythm, but that certainly did not appear to be the case of the teams that opted to rest their starters this last week.
Yeah, and then just from a more global perspective on last weekend, two teams caught my eye for different reasons. One in the AFC, I was really surprised that Houston won that game. I honestly gave them no chance against a Chargers team coached by Harbaugh that had been really operating smoothly and cleanly for most of the season. And then Justin Herbert throws five interceptions and the Texans and CJ Stroud playing kind of just like a B-minus game, take care of business. So I agree. I don't give them much chance to emerge out of this weekend, but I wouldn't count them out only because I did last weekend and they proved me wrong. And then in the NFC, I was not as impressed by the Eagles as you would have expected to be in what felt like a pretty convincing victory. I mean, there was never much doubt in my mind, even as that game was quasi there for the taking, that the Eagles would win. And yet I still walked away from that game feeling like I should have seen more out of that team against, as you said, a decimated Packers lineup. They did let them hang around in that game longer than I think they should have. And I didn't think they were as dominant in the trenches as I imagined they would be. I don't really know if that's an indication of how they'll look moving forward, but we've talked about the Eagles for, I think, the better part of a month now as the most viable threat to the Lions in the NFC. They didn't look as dangerous or daunting last weekend as, again, I thought they would. Now, that can always change quickly, and they still have all the pieces to wreak havoc. But I know there's been healthy and probably unhealthy debate in Philly this week about the way Jalen Hurts played, and that will continue until or unless he plays better on Sunday, correct? Sunday afternoon? Is that the Eagles game? Right, because AFC Saturday, NFC Saturday night. Yeah, so we'll see how they look on Sunday afternoon. But I had been pretty confidently penciling in Lions Eagles NFC Championship for again about a month now, and the way the Eagles played and some of the flaws they showed on offense just gave me a little bit of pause about their certainty to reach the NFC title game.
Yeah, the Chargers game. You know, I didn't even think to bring it up, but on par, I think, of shock for me with the Vikings result. You know, Harbaugh does what he does and builds a strong culture, a tough team, one predicated on running that grinds out victories in lots of different ways. And you really thought the Chargers would stop charging, if you will, under his rule. And for most part, you look at their results over the course of the season, they, you know, when they lost games, they were generally close. Then they had that one hiccup against the Bucks where they kind of got smashed late in the season, very similarly. And so I think the Chargers are going to be a force to be reckoned with here as he kind of gets his fingerprints more over that organization and that culture. And man, I tell you, when I watch McConkey, I know he's becoming kind of a young star. It's like a young Amon-Ra, right? Just the way he plays the game, the style, the routes, the toughness, like just really reminds me of Amon-Ra kind of in the early stages of his career. I think he's going to be really, really good in this league. They probably could use a little bit more at running back, but I think the Chargers are going to be competitive for a while, as long as Harbaugh sticks there and doesn't, you know, jump to another job or wear out his welcome.
I like the McConkey Amon-Ra comparison because they're also similar in their deceptive speed. I think you look at those two guys who are probably cast mostly as slot receivers and assume that, you know, they win with quickness, but not so much speed. And then you see McConkey break away on that. What was it? Like a 90-yard touchdown and pretty much left the defenders in the dust. And we've seen St. Brown do that a couple times this season on some of his long gains where he actually has the breakaway speed that I don't think people give him credit for. So I agree. McConkey is a more complete receiver than I gave him credit for entering the NFL. And with Herbert throwing him the ball for the next several years, he's definitely a star, maybe a superstar on the rise, and certainly feels like a Jim Harbaugh guy in the same way that St. Brown feels like a Dan Campbell guy.
Yeah, Georgia, man, it's just like their NFL ready talent is wild to me. And another guy off of their different side of the ball, but still in the playoffs and making an impact, is Kamari Lassiter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was a guy that was kind of tied here, and he didn't have a ton of ball production coming out of college, cornerback at Georgia, for those that don't know. But I think 4 picks in the regular season, might have had another one and in the Texans win. So just think he's really, you know, looking like a pretty special talent too. I could see why the Lions fans that did like his profile during the draft, you can see why. Now, in terms of the Eagles, I like the Eagles and the Bills are kind of like the AFC NFC mirror teams to me. At least they were through the regular season, and the Bills did exactly what you'd expect the Bills to do, and maybe even then some, with, because Denver's pretty good defensively. Bo Nix is you know, sneaky productive, but they just stomped them. You know, that really does look like a Super Bowl caliber team, and that's going to be the best game this week.
Oh my God,
or should be. I mean, I'm very, very thankful that we will be done with our work, you know, Saturday or Sunday morning at 5 a.m, but hopefully rested enough to take in that game, because it should be an absolute treat between two just awesome dynamic offenses. I hope they score 1,000 points.
Yeah. I think that's going to set ratings records on Sunday Night Football for at least the divisional round. I don't know what other records you could set besides like Super Bowl numbers, but I'd be shocked if that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson Sunday night game doesn't go down as the most watched divisional round or like non Super Bowl playoff game in like the Sunday Night Football era. That has all the markings of a classic between two clear-cut MVP front runners and two quarterbacks who are trying to prove that they can get over the hump. And now one of them has to die at the hands of the other. And that's the harsh reality of being a quarterback.
This is not Gladiator. What is going on?
But this is the harsh reality of being a quarterback in the AFC in this Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow era, is that every single year, three of the greatest quarterbacks maybe ever, when we look back on this league in 30, 40, 50 years, won't go home with the trophy they came into the season seeking, or even an appearance in the Super Bowl. So it's another reason why things have set up well here for the Lions in the NFC, is that they just don't have – they can let the AFC cannibalize itself, especially those quarterbacks, and just hope to have their best game when they face one of them in the Super Bowl if they get there.
And then Herbert just did the samurai suicide, seppuku or whatever, just killed himself, made it real easy for the rest of the group. Eagles, you're right. I mean, very – very lackluster effort. Like I said, I didn't think much of that Packers team defensively, a little bit better than they were offensively, but they seem disjointed, out of rhythm. And maybe that's the one example where the rust from rest showed up. I don't know what's going on with AJ Brown. He missed that entire week of practice with a knee injury. I don't know what his, I know he's enjoying books on the bench, which is awesome. Maybe he was just more invested in that than, route running in this one, but you know, if he gets rolling, that's obviously a very different offense, because it's tough to stop that run game, and that's where it's all starting for them, right? You got RPO City there; they run RPO more than anybody. Yeah. You got Hurts' mobility. You got Saquon Barkley doing Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, type production. Like, if Brown gets going, you know, that offense will, I think, get back on track, and the defense. Darius Slay is ageless.
I love that we have a Matthew Stafford Darius Slay showdown in the playoffs. You know, two guys who have long been champions of each other. I even remember when they both played here, with how much admiration they would speak of each other with, and especially Slay about Stafford, always calling him, even before the public pendulum had kind of swung in Stafford's favor, you know, one of the game's most talented quarterbacks, one of the best throwers of the football in the NFL. And Darius Slay definitely wants to add that skin on his wall. He would love the chance to intercept Matthew Stafford in a playoff game and then ask him to sign the ball afterwards. But
probably.
He really is ageless. I mean, on his interception against the Packers, he ran that route basically for, was it Dontavian Wicks, who he was in coverage against, whoever the receiver was.
Great question.
He ran the route for him, and he was stride for stride the entire way, despite being probably 12, 13 years that dude's senior, and then gets his head around at the perfect time, makes the play on the ball. When we look back on the NFL, let's say 10 years from now, and you take stock of the ball production Darius Slay has had over his career, you're going to be hard-pressed to keep that guy out of the Hall of Fame. He might not have some of the all-pro selections that he probably deserved over his first several seasons, but the passes defended and interceptions that he's compiled over the past 10 seasons and still probably three or four really strong ones to come is going to put him in that conversation when it's all said and done. Is that a crazy take?
No, I think about that sometimes. I don't feel like I have the best grasp of Hall of Fame credentials, and maybe it's just I haven't really taken the time to look at it. But five guys get in every year, like that's what it is. There's veteran committee and what all that, but five guys get voted in by the panel every year. And so, what does it take to be one of those guys? Slay's had a great career, you know, six Pro Bowls, an All Pro, 28 interceptions, 155 pass defenses, like. Great career. I was having similar conversations about one of the Lions opponents this week, Bobby Wagner. To me, Bobby Wagner is a Hall of Famer, and he's 34 years old and putting together an all-pro caliber season for, I don't know what team this is for him, fourth, fifth, maybe a little bit dip last year with the Rams, but, you know, won a Super Bowl, was the heart and soul of that Seahawks defense for a while. Like, that's a Hall of Famer to me, but you know, I don't always have, you know, full grasp on what gets you in. And it's not like baseball where it's kind of cut and dry with the stats, or basketball. There's, you know, only so many stars in the league at a given time. Like, or, you know, I mean, shit, like what, eight guys play a night on most rosters, eight, nine guys.
Right.
Like, there's what defines a Hall of Fame guard? What sets that guy apart? So I don't know, but it's certainly going to be an interesting conversation. And Ndamukong Suh is going to be an interesting conversation coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
I mean, peak dominance. He wasn't maybe the most likable guy from a media perspective, but I don't care about any of that. Like, yeah. Ndamukong Suh to me is a Hall of Fame player, even though he was a I don't think it tarnishes him at all that he was a mercenary late in his career.
Yeah, I just think that the length of Slay's stay as a legitimate cornerback one in the NFL is what sets him apart. I mean, he's been at this, maybe, you know, the height of his game for 10 years now. And that's really hard to do at that position, where the minute you lose a step, you go from CB1 to practice squad. Like you can't, there is no room for like physical degradation at cornerback. You have to be on your stuff every single year. And it's amazing to me that he has stayed up there as the league gets only seems like younger and faster every year and more physical, especially at wide receiver. But just to put some numbers to what I said, he is the NFL's active leader in passes defended with 160. He also has more passes defended since 2014 than anyone in the NFL by 30. And over that span is sixth in interceptions. And again, you know, if you factor in 3 to 4 more years of strong play, I think he puts himself in that conversation, and he'll definitely tell you that he belongs in it.
So this is interesting because Pro Football Reference does a Hall of Fame monitor, which is something I love, and Slay is not close.
Yeah, maybe I'm overselling it. I could be.
But I think it's interesting because they're comparing him to other DBs, and I will say that, you know, for all the increases you've seen with trends, most of those favor offense. And so, you know, I remember when I was doing this 1962 Lions study, and I'm reading all the game stories from the 62 season, and it's like every fourth play is an interception. Like, it's just wild, right? Like, that's just not how it is now. There's fewer interceptions to go around, so it's probably really tough to compare him historically to other, you know, it's not like Night Train Lane, who was intercepting eight passes a year. Like, it's just, that's not the nature of the NFL anymore. The other two guys we brought up, Bobby Wagner, actually ahead of pace on a Hall of Fame monitor.
Interesting.
So he's at a, whatever their little rating is, 111. typical inside linebacker, 105. And then Sue is behind, but not terrible. 85, typical 102, 12th among DTs that they have out of the hall. So still probably a chance there, but he's going to be one of those guys that's fighting an uphill battle on reputation, which,
right,
whatever. I mean, you lie in the bed you made, but like I said, I think his dominance was, I don't know if Terrell Davis-esque is too much of a stretch, but like Sue's peak was really, really, really good.
Yeah, darn near.
He just came here, unfortunately, and yeah, that was not where the eyes of the NFL world were looking for the longest time, but they are now.
Just wait till he wins Super Bowl MVP for these Lions in 2 weeks when he comes back and signs a deal that everyone is clamoring for him to sign.
That is not.
That, and that wraps not up Hall of Fame talk on the Detroit Football Network podcast.
Yeah. All right. We should probably talk about this game. So why don't we take a little break here, come back and break down really what anybody wants to talk about there. I'll just skip this anyway. So we'll be back after the break. Talk about the Lions' upcoming divisional round matchup against the Washington Commanders. All right, we're back on the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by Will Birchfield. We just put 17 guys in the Hall of Fame before the break. Sadly, we were not able to lock down a locker room interview this week. Had a couple plans. They fell through for different reasons. You don't care, but we tried, and we got a guy hypothetically lined up for next week. So we'll try to get back on that train. But what the people care about, Will, is after a very, very long bye week, which they enjoyed, I assure you, watching the Packers fall apart, their Lions will be playing the Washington Commanders. And I think it's a very compelling matchup. I think there's probably going to be a lot of points scored in this one. And really, everything with this matchup starts with Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure does, because everything with the Commanders starts with Jaden Daniels. You know, he was, I think, billed as the savior when he arrived there, and he's lived up to it. I mean, he has turned that franchise around, along with obviously head coach Dan Quinn, and turned them in 1 year into a legitimate contender in the NFL. I think if you make it this far in the playoffs, you deserve that title attached to your name. And you know, I was talking with Jack Campbell about Jaden Daniels today, and he was like, you know, I want to call this quarterback unique, but it seems like every other quarterback we face now in the NFL is like these guys. They're becoming more and more of the standard, the norm across the league. These dual threat quarterbacks who can kill you with their arm, but also with their legs, and they're just a bear to prepare for. And you know, Campbell said in his mind, this is Jack Campbell again, that this game comes down to eye discipline for the Lions defense, because this is a Commanders offense that runs a whole lot of motion, and as Campbell called it, presents a bunch of eye candy before the snap. But in the pass game anyways, once you can sift through that, it's a relatively straightforward offense. They run pretty simple routes once you can identify exactly what they're doing. So he said for us, it's just a matter of working through all of the different the different things they'll show you, and to seize on the plays once you see them. You know, you said, yeah, in the run game, it's definitely even more complicated, because you'll have turbo motion going one way, then you, as he said, you'll have eight pullers coming this way. He said it, you know, kind of reminds him of watching Nebraska, the way they ran their offense when he was at Iowa. I don't know if that comparison resonates for anyone, but for the Nebraska fans out there listening, that's what Jack Campbell sees. But it was interesting to me to hear him say that this really for the defense comes down to eye discipline. And again, I think knowing that, Anzalone being back on the field as he was for that Vikings game, is just another huge advantage for the Lions in this matchup.
What does your point have in common with Amir Abdullah and Dominic Raiola? Lions and Nebraska points. That's right. It's really interesting watching their offense, because I would call it a conflict-based offense. Like, you're putting defenders in conflict in their positioning, and you got your zone read option, whatever you want to call it. And so you got the edge defender that's got to decide and align his body in a way to, you know, kind of play 50-50, the running back and the quarterback. And then you have the RPOs, which I believe they ran the third most in the NFL this year. And that puts the linebackers, the Jack Campbells and the Alex Anzalones in conflict. And, I mean, it really is, especially for those second level guys, it is about eye discipline. And, you know, I feel much better about where Anzalone is in his career with his experience and kind of sifting through some of that than I do with Jack Campbell still at this point.
Yeah.
When Campbell knows where he's going and it's a point A to point B, there's few better. I mean, he's just so big, strong, athletic, pretty good at kind of navigating through traffic when he's, but you know, you still see a lot of young player missteps there, and it's not unusual. It's not a unfair criticism or an attack on Jack Campbell. It's just there's things like he's not seen at all or a lot, and so no different than most young linebackers that, you know, that first step might be false and get you out of position and it gets attacked. You see a lot with him with play action, and that's also a symptom of how Aaron Glenn wants them, you know, playing play action. First things first for this defense is stopping the run, which means they're coming forward and charging hard to kind of fill some of those run lanes to make sure they're not getting beat there. But that also has Campbell scrambling to get back in a position to cover a pass, and that's not his strength at this point. And, you know, maybe it never will be, or maybe it's still developing, who knows. But you know, I suspect the Commanders will probably test Campbell quite a bit in this game to see if they can, you know, take advantage of some of those missteps. I think the other important thing is, man, and it's good the Lions are built this way, but you are going to need perimeter tackling. And I was talking to Meek Robertson about that today, and I go, I don't know, man. I look at the tape and I see a guy that doesn't like to slide a whole lot. And, you know, a Meek just sly smile on his face. Yeah. Like, he is more than happy to let Jaden Daniels know he should slide if he's coming into his land. Ameek's a great tackler. Brian Branch is a really good tackler. Fortunately, Carl Davis won't be out there for this one, but it's really, you know, he was obviously a really good tackler and brought in for that reason. Terry and Arnold is above average tackler, and they're going to need all those guys because this is a quarterback that will most frequently with his runs get to the edges and following those lead blockers. And it's where he just does a ton of damage.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned some of Campbell's missteps, because I think that the lone explosive play the Vikings hit back in week 18 was on that misassignment, I guess you would call it, by Jack Campbell when he just hit the wrong gap on that like 65-yard run. Was it by Cam Akers?
Oh yeah,
down the right sideline. And I think you actually turned to me in the press box and you were like, was that Campbell's fault? And I let it breathe for a week before bringing the play back to him, but did ask him about it today, and he was like, yeah, that was on me. And I asked him how long it took him to get over it, and he was like, a really long time. Yeah, he was still kind of chewing on it, and he said it was made even worse by the fact that they didn't play last week. So he's had this taste in his mouth for the better part of 2 weeks now, and so he's pretty eager to see, you know, that concept again on Saturday night if he does to right his wrong. But you know, Jaden Daniels can just, he can get you in so many different ways, and in some ways you have to accept that he's going to make plays. I think the challenge for the Lions is just to limit the explosives. And, you know, they talk so much, rightfully so, about rushing with discipline and with gap integrity and to crush the pocket. And that's true. I mean, that's obviously, you know, probably point one when you start assembling the plan and stopping Daniels. But as Alex Anzalone was telling me today, look, he's going to get out. It's inevitable over the course of the game that a few times, a handful of times, someone isn't going to rush in their right lane, or they will, and Daniels is going to get out all the same because he's that athletic. And at that point, I feel like this is where the game will be defined for the Lions defense. Anzalone was like, look, there were plays last Sunday where he gets out of the pocket and you could see that he had the option to run for a first down, but instead he throws for a 30 or 40 yard gain because the Bucs defenders were either out of position, scrambling, or just like not plastering in the secondary. And so Anzalone said, the key is when he does inevitably get out of the pocket, if we're in man, everyone has to plaster their cover in the secondary. And if we're in zone, you better go find someone. And if he takes off for a 10, 12-yard gain on the ground, so be it. It's those 30 to 40-yard throws that we saw Josh Allen hit so many of outside the pocket against the Bills that the defense has to limit on Saturday night.
More of the Detroit Football Network podcast continues after this.
So I tackled a project last night. It's going to run tomorrow on the Detroit Football Network. There's this narrative that the Lions can't handle running quarterbacks. And I've long countered, and Dan Campbell decided to counter with the same point of who the hell does.
Yeah.
It's not totally accurate, but there's a reason there's a proliferation of this style of player across the NFL because they work. So I decided to do a little deep dive on first the numbers. I think sometimes we get trapped into trends existing because of moments in time memories, right? But the 2022 season, Justin Fields going ham on them, right? For two times. Lions gave up 700 rushing yards to quarterbacks that year. I went back 11 years and stopped trying because I don't think there were that many running quarterbacks previously. Couldn't find another season where a team gave up more rushing yards to a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Last two seasons, 415 and 465. Still kind of close to the bottom of the league in what yardage allowed, but when you divide that over 17 games, Will, it's 6 more yards per game over the average NFL team of rushing quarterbacks. So
You're
like, okay, that's not a whole lot. So then I took that a step further. I took their 8 games this year against quarterbacks that rushed for more than 250 yards a season. Just tried to set some kind of baseline of mobile quarterbacks. And I watched all 49 of those running plays to see if there were themes, breakdowns, whatever. And what I'll tell you is, it's not as bad as you think, and, and not necessarily you, but the people that think it's bad, it's not as bad as you think. One, there's not a whole lot of consistency to the issues. Like the guys that blow the assignments in particular games, there were several that were the result of backup linebackers that probably won't be playing in this one. Your Ben Neiman's, your Ezekiel Turner's of the world, even Malcolm Rodriguez had a few bad eyes plays, if you will. You talk about rush lane integrity, everybody gets out of their gap every once in a while. Aiden did it. Pascal has done it.
Mm-hmm.
Za'Darius Smith will overrush the pocket. Aleem McNeil got a little wild sometimes in there, and they're going to have to be on their P's and Q's on that front for sure. But nobody crushed them in rushing this year. I know Josh Allen had a game that felt like he crushed them, but it wasn't so much as a running quarterback. He had 4 carries for 15 yards at the half, and then he kind of busted out for a big one late when they were getting kind of desperate to stop him. But Daniel's a little bit different. I struggled with a comp for him as well. Little bit Lamar Jackson, but not as thick, I guess, or as sturdy in his ability to take hits, but he's kind of got that speed. He's got that arm talent to match with it. Kind of runs like Caleb Williams, and that shiftiness to go with the speed as well. But I think as long as they tackle, I don't think they gave up a run to a quarterback over 21 yards this year. So as long as you hold him to that 50 to 60 yard range in a game, and you look at it like the Kyler Murray game where Kyler had, I think, 37 yards in the first quarter on 2 carries, and then didn't do squat for the rest of the game, like, you can survive this game and you can win, and you don't even need to survive it. I mean, you're the favorite. You're the heavy favorite for a reason.
So I
think Daniels is going to have some runs, and I don't think there's any question about it. But The key is when it's a third and four, you can't let them convert it. When it's a fourth and two, you can't let them convert it. And, you know, you can't take your eyes off the prize with those deep balls that you talked about earlier, because they've got some weapons and really one of the better ones in the NFL in McLaurin.
Yeah, McLaurin's a stud. I don't know if he gets the credit that he is owed. I mean, he's had, I think, five straight 1,000-yard seasons, and as a rookie, it was 900-something. I mean, he's on quietly one of these Mike Evans tracks where he just year after year breaks the 1K threshold, and it almost goes underappreciated because maybe we're numb to it, but and this is mostly just me retorting to Wojo, who for some reason thinks that McLaurin like isn't a daunting or
difficult receiver
to cover. So maybe this is just a straw man's argument, but McLaurin is a and you can take this from Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, there are a few receivers around the NFL who I feel like St. Brown will sometimes kind of mention unprompted, and when you ask him about his peers at his position, and it feels like McLaurin's one that he cites often. He's got a lot of respect for the way McLaurin can run routes. I think they're similar receivers in some ways. What McLaurin can do that we don't see St. Brown do as much is really stretch the field. I think he had five or six 40-plus yard receptions this year, which was either tied or just one fewer than J-Mo. So if you're getting downfield and over the top of defenses at the same rate as a player like J-Mo, like, yeah, you better keep your eyes peeled and glued on that guy. And it'll be interesting to see how the Lions defend McLaurin on Saturday night. Is this a one-on-one job for Amik? Is this more of a varied defense they attack him with? But I know I've said for most of this week that you kind of have to accept that Daniels is going to get his, but if you can limit the effect that McLaurin makes, you're going to win this game. And I think you're going to win it rather handily. Like, if you hold McLaurin under, call it 70 yards, you keep him out of the end zone. He had 13 touchdowns this season, by far a career high. I just don't think that the Commanders have enough outside of him, including Daniels, to really keep up with the Lions offense on a night where they should score a lot.
Yeah. I think probably the way they cover him is going to be a little similar to what they do with Jefferson, right? I think there's going to be a little bit of safety love, whether that's Branch underneath or Kirby Joseph over the top with a little bit of a bracket. Like, I think they're going to protect Amik. I think that's the smart strategy. I know Amik would tell you he doesn't need any protection, but it's smart business. And on the other side there, they've got another receiver that Amon-Ra St. Brown mentions unprompted, and that's Diami Brown.
Yeah.
Because he was in the list.
He was.
And I don't know much about his career because it wasn't much of a career before this year, but Washington signed a few receivers that Noah Brown being probably the primary one that is out and injured. So they've needed Brown to step up, and he just had a pretty damn good game. And maybe the best of his career.
Yeah.
Five catches, 89 yards, a touchdown. I would be very surprised if he's had 89 yards in a game before, since he had 165, 143, and 168 the previous three seasons, and had 308 this season. Wasn't doing squat until late in the year when he kind of started needing to be that number two guy. But
I think it's the Diami Brown revenge game. Is that what
I don't know
the stage for?
As soon as he caught a long pass on Sunday night, I did the whole Leonardo DiCaprio sitting up and pointing at my TV screen, like, oh, there's that. That's number 12 on the list or whatever. I don't know. Just really interesting. But yeah, I love Washington's offense. Obviously they've got a really good coordinator. They've got a very good running back who runs in the style, I think, of David Montgomery. He's got an angriness to him between the tackles, which always makes a running quarterback that much better, because you have to respect the play action and the zone reads. It's a good offense. It's going to put up some points. But you know, flipping to the other side, Washington's got a ton of name brand talent. They really do. They've got name brand defensive tackles. They've got two edges that are playing really well, that have done some good stuff in this league. Some heat seeking missiles at linebacker and strong safety. I'm a big Chin fan. Just he's from the what was the big ass cornerback for Seattle? Cam Chancellor. He's got Cam Chancellor DNA, if you will. But their cornerbacks are a weakness, and obviously Sanistro's going to, I think, be really good in this league eventually, and probably already playing above his head as a rookie. But I think that's where the Lions can really take advantage in this game. They're not great against the run, and their outside corners are a bit of a weakness for maybe Amon-Ra and J-Mo to exploit.
Yeah, I said it last week, so I don't want to repeat myself too much, but the reason I felt like this was a favorable matchup was just because of what you said about their run defense and how they've really struggled for most of the season to stop it. And I know Bucky Irving didn't put up huge numbers last week, but he did rush for about 4.5 yards per carry, and that was actually lower than the Commanders allowed for most of the season. They were closer to 5 yards per carry, and with the way that Jahmyr Gibbs has just taken off over the last three games, and knowing that the Demo is back in the fold, I just think that the Lions, with a well-rested offensive line, are going to come flying off the ball on Saturday night. And it would not surprise me to see them just jam the ball down Washington's throats on the first drive and dare them to stop it. And if and when they do commit extra resources to the box, that's when they start taking advantage of those overmatched corners on the outside with guys like Saint and J-Mo and even Sam Laporta. And I think to me that the most fascinating question on offense this week is how they reintroduce Montgomery, given how well Gibbs has played as the lead horse. I mean, they took the reins off of Gibbs in that Bears game on late December, a few days before Christmas. And since then, he has looked like maybe the best player in the NFL. Maybe that's another hot take, but if 487 scrimmage yards and 6 touchdowns in 3 games, they don't beat the Vikings without him. He has been just scintillating every time, almost every time he touches the ball. The few times he hasn't, it's mostly been red zone and short yardage. And I think that's the natural reintroduction of Demo. You know, I don't think this goes back to a 50-50 split. I don't think that it should. I think even Demo referenced that himself yesterday when he said, look, this is, I'm here to help out Ja, whatever he needs from me, I'm going to make sure he has, but this is kind of his show, he said. And it doesn't mean there isn't a role for Demo. You know, he's certainly going to be involved in this game, but I think the Lions even know themselves, like, They need to ride Ja right now because he is running the ball and catching the ball and just making plays with the ball at almost an unstoppable rate. And so maybe it's 70-30 division of carries on Saturday night. But I do think, you know, there's going to be a few times when the Lions need a hard yard or two or a goal line carry or two. And that's when we see Demo come back on the field and remind everyone that he can still run with as much power as any other back in the NFL.
So we've gone from the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram split. We are not swinging this to the Alvin Kamara, Jamal Williams split. That's a little too far. More of a Alvin Kamara, Latavius Murray split is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like we even heard it in the way that Ben Johnson spoke today and a little bit in the way Dan Campbell has spoken this week when he and Dan especially just saying, look, there's a role for Montgomery in this game. And that felt like a way of saying there's a specialized purpose for him. You know, Gibbs is still our guy. We're still going to let him gallop as much as he can, but we'll find spots, the right spots to use Demo. And to me, it's those short yardage, goal line, red zone care. I don't know. How do you see that workload breaking down Saturday night?
No, I think the 70-30 is probably a pretty good starting point. You know, it really was 50-50 when he went down. I kind of pulled up some numbers today, and I think it was like 240 to 225 for their carries plus targets over the first 14 games. And so, you know, I didn't bother looking up the snap counts. I think Gibbs generally played a little bit more in the snap count department. But, I think that's the right course of action. You know, I was a little concerned after that Chicago game of Gibbs wearing down, and you need that offensive potency to make the Super Bowl run, but he clearly can handle it. And the bye week gave him a little bit of time to get the body right. And, you know, just in general right now, I mean, the injury report is good. You know, the guys that missed practice today, Taylor Decker, I don't know this for sure. I didn't bother confirming, but probably out for the birth of a child.
Yeah.
You know, Pat O'Connor is probably out for this game and possibly for the year. We'll see what the team does on the defensive tackle front this weekend for, you know, some depth. And Terrion Arnold's back, looks good. The big lingering question mark is Kevin Zeitler. He was doing some work on the side with trainers, but kind of bristled at somebody trying to get an injury update from him today, which I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm wondering if the Lions are going to play this one conservative. And if they do, it'd be really, really interesting to see Christian Mahogany's second start coming in the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, he rose to the occasion against the Bears, and you never want to draw too many conclusions from one start against a beat up defense, but I think he gave them everything they could have hoped for and maybe more in that game. He was a force in, as he says, cleaning the pocket. I mean, there are a number of plays in that Bears game where he would have kind of handled his man and he would see an opportunity to come help handle someone else's, and he would not pass that chance up. I mean, especially in the pass game, he was doing damage in front of Jared Goff and the way that you want an interior lineman to do it. And, you know, there's obviously things that he could have done better and probably could do more as like a road grader on the ground. But I think they would feel pretty confident if it comes to Mahogany about his ability to step in there rather seamlessly. And it also helps any young offensive lineman to step in between Frank Ragnow and, in this case, Penei Sewell, especially playing next to Ragnow and kind of having his sense for the game and his brain for the game as an asset, you know, right on your hip. And then if you miss a block, odds are Penei is going to help you clean that up. So if Zeitler can't go, I think what Mahogany showed against the Bears, what he had showed in practice before that, he's got to give you pretty good faith in his ability to slide in there and at least get the job done.
Yeah, I asked Frank maybe a week or two ago. Like I said, my eyes told me Mahogany looked really good. What was the reality of it? And you know, Frank, as he does, got a little wide eyed, and he's like, it was really, really impressive. And he loved the unprompted help that he got sometimes. There was one, I wish I remember the Bears defensive tackle, but Frank had him fairly locked up and Mahogany came and just sent the guy to the moon. I mean, just
because
obliterated him for no reason other than he's a dirtbag.
I was about to say, that's the dirtbag stuff that Brad Holmes was talking about the day they drafted him.
And he did it constantly. It's like, if I don't, you know, I asked Frank if it was intentional that like there was a dozen times in that game where Mahogany had nobody to block in pass pro. And he's like, no, that's just how they rushed. But he had this really keen awareness. You know, he assessed the situation quickly, realized nobody was coming late, and then immediately pivoted to hitting someone. Like he was just ready to help, whether it was Taylor or Frank, and whether they needed it or not, he was ready, willing, and viciously able. I mean, it's one game, but like you see something you haven't seen from the other Lions backups that have stepped in the last couple of years, and you see legitimate, I think, starting potential with Christian Mahogany, which is exciting because, you know, they're going to need a starter and possibly two at guard here in the next 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, and as you said, the Commanders do have some interior defensive players that can give you some trouble, starting with Jonathan Allen, who has been, you know, one of the class players at defensive tackle for feels like 5-6 years now. I mean, he's had a really nice career there, and it's almost surprising to look at some of their defensive numbers against the run, because it feels like they have the personnel that would hold up a little bit better on the ground, but for whatever reason, they haven't. But all it takes is one big game from that unit to change the perception and kind of erase the idea over the season that they can't stop the run. But I just think the Lions have the horses, the scheme and the personnel to get it done on Saturday night. Look, this spread I think is up to 10.5, which is kind of insane.
Whoa.
For a divisional round playoff game. I do think it has jumped by 2 full points, and that's a huge number that exists for a reason. And I don't know if we want to get into picking this thing, but I just look at this matchup and I look at all of the ways the Lions can pose problems for the Commanders defense and feel like this is destined to be a track meet. And eventually I think the Lions just have the firepower to pull away. We've seen them do this a couple times this year where you get into the third and then early stages fourth, and they just keep coming at you in waves with power on some plays, with speed on others, with precision and creativity on the next play, and eventually a defense just caves. And I think that's the way that they beat the Commanders on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think we should get into predictions. One more point I want to make about the Commanders defense, because it's confusing to me just looking at the numbers, and this is just a symptom of I haven't watched their film. There's only so much time in the week, and I'm not going to. But Payne and Allen have been not good according to Pro Football Focus, and that would actually track with some of their running numbers. And I don't know what's happened with Daron Payne. I mean, he was pretty good. He earned a pretty massive contract. I think it was 4 for 90 or 4 for 80, somewhere in that ballpark, and just hasn't lived up to that, even though he's still physically in his prime. Now he's playing with 9 fingers, if you saw that x-ray. Gross. And then Jonathan Allen, he's got a little bit more of an excuse for his struggles this year. He tore his pec, and I don't have any idea how he got back as quickly as he did. I mean, obviously probably a partial tear, but back in like 2 months or less. I mean, making CJ Gardner-Johnson look weak. So
I hear that comment, by the way. Somehow what you just said is going to get back to CJ Gardner-Johnson.
He's going to write a song about it.
NFC Championship.
he's going to have a song about it. He'll be the second Lions media member to have a song written about them following Marvin Jones's smash hit on Dave Burkett. But yeah, let's roll into predictions here. We have to do 10.5. Is that our line?
Well, Zach's got it listed as 9.5. So we'll hit 9.5.
We've got to get a whole extra point. Remember that game we used to play where we, I mean, apparently Vegas started playing that game because I feel like they have to offset all their losses because Lions fans just bet on their team like crazy.
Yeah. How are you leaning on this one?
I can't give 9.5. it's too much. Like, give me the Commanders with the line. I think the Lions win this game, but it's probably in the ballpark of a 5 to 8 point win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's in the ballpark of a 5 to 8 point game most of the way, but I do think the Lions hit a
touchdown.
I do think the Lions hit a big one late. Not like a backdoor cover play, but they come up with that explosive to put the game away, you know, with like 4 to 5 minutes to go, and they turn what probably felt like a back and forth contest into more of a 12 or 13 point margin. So I'll take them to cover. Like I said, I think they just wear this defense out, but I think we're in for a very exciting back and forth game between two teams that can really pose problems to defenses. And it's interesting because two kind of polar opposite quarterbacks, but it feels like both are in for big days in this one.
Both those quarterbacks embrace contact. Love it.
Yeah, well, of course.
Big hitters.
No one blocks like Jared Goff.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, you talk about a big play late in the game, and I started rifling through all the trick plays in my head, and I'm like, oh man, if this team makes a Super Bowl, they're going to do something outlandish.
Yeah, we're going to get like, a Kevin Zeitler throwing touchdown.
Yeah, Ben Johnson's going to empty the bag before taking whatever job he's apparently taking, according to Adam Schefter. Got anything else there, Will?
No, I think that sums it up. I'm looking forward to this one. Saturday's going to come.
Oh, me too.
And I love the fact, as you said, that we can settle in for the games on Sunday and even get a chance to watch most of the first game on Saturday afternoon. Oh, speaking of, come hang out with me if you want to, or just come drink beers if you want to at B-Dubs. We're going to be doing a little 97.1 The Ticket live broadcast from the B-Dubs downtown in Detroit on Saturday, pretty much all day Saturday afternoon, I think beginning around noon up to
camp. Are you going to show up to the game on hammered?
might have a little buzz going. No, I think I'm stopping by from 2:30 to 3, and I'll definitely be hanging out afterwards to have a couple. So yeah, come on down, hang out, say what's up. And look, these are the moments that Detroit and Lions fans in particular have been waiting for so long. I loved the way the city met the moment last year for that playoff run, the two home games, and I cannot wait to see and feel and smell the atmosphere again on Saturday night.
That'll just be your Budweiser burps. All right. Podcast produced as always by Zach Clark. You're gonna be able to find this podcast on all the apps, Odyssey, where we're housed, Spotify, Apple, download, like, rate, subscribe.
There's always too many options.
What are the other things you could do?
I know. I always feel like I'm missing one, but I also feel like I've said too many.
Print it out, put it in a bathtub, bathe in it. I don't care. You can find Will's work at 971theticket.com. You can hang out with Will apparently Saturday at B-Dubs. What'd you say, Royal Oak?
No, downtown Detroit. Oh,
downtown.
Baby. Yes, sir.
I don't know why I put in the burbs. That was not good of me. and you find my work at Detroit Football Network at DetroitFootball.net. For Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers. Thanks for listening.
Peace.